Can't believe everything you read on my face. I'm over you. You heard I'm drinking more than I should. That I ain't been looking all that good. Someone told you I was taking it rough. If I seem a little bit cold, it only means you've lost the hold you have on me. I'm over you.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. At the UN General Assembly, President Trump praising his administration's policies, including border security, but also criticized the UN of promoting empty words when it comes to ending wars. During his speech, the president also pushed for a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal. ABC's Tom Sufi Burich has more.
I think what we didn't get from the president in that speech is any comment or suggestions about what might come in Gaza the day after the war. So when the war does finally finish, what will happen next? These are the questions which we believe the U.S. is discussing, and according to U.S. officials, they are looking at this with potentially Arab nations, Muslim nations, trying to work out if they could play a role in Gaza afterwards. But there's a lot of detail to be worked out.
Philanthropist and billionaire Mackenzie Scott says she's donating $70 million to the United Negro College Fund. That will give a boost to historically black colleges and universities. And on Wall Street, trading is down this hour due to lagging tech stocks. This is ABC News. After nearly a week, if it was preempted, late-night show Jimmy Kimmel Live returns to ABC television stations tonight, but not all stations may be airing the show.
The Walt Disney Company says it has decided to return Jimmy Kimmel Live to the air after having thoughtful conversations with Kimmel, and that it stopped production of the show last week to avoid further inflaming a tense situation during an emotional moment for our country. While the show will return to production, two owners of ABC-affiliated stations, Nexstar and Sinclair, say their stations will continue to preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live, showing their own programming instead. Nexstar saying in a statement its stations will focus on continuing to produce local news and other programming for their respective markets. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Disney is the parent company of ABC News. Residents in the Southern Plains and Ozarks today bracing for severe storms and possible flash flooding. And across the globe, Typhoon Ragasa moving south of Hong Kong and lashing the city. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
Wisconsin Radio Network News. I'm Ted Ehlen. At the Capitol, Assembly Republicans are planning to introduce a swath of changes to Wisconsin elections. Assembly Elections Committee Vice Chair Scott Krug tells WISN-TV's Up Front he hopes the package will be able to make it through the legislature.
We've worked really hard with stakeholders across the spectrum, whether it's voting groups in Milwaukee or County Clerks Association, Democrats in the legislature, even talked to the governor's office about almost everything that's been in these bills.
The bill would allow for early counts of absentee ballots, but would place restrictions on drop boxes, including 24/7 surveillance streamed online and requiring law enforcement to be present when ballots are moved. Two sites serving Wisconsin veterans who are homeless are now closed.
Veterans Housing and Recovery Program sites in Green Bay and Chippewa Falls closed September 12th due to a lack of funding. Joey Hoey with the Department of Veterans Affairs updated a state Senate committee last week.
We were able to provide all the veterans in our care at Green Bay and Chippewa Falls with alternative options.
Veterans groups support a bill from State Senator Andre Jacques to provide funding, which was not included in the final budget compromise between Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Republican legislative leaders earlier this year. At the Capitol, Bob Hague, Wisconsin Radio Network.
A dramatic increase in fall-related emergency medical incidents in Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin Department of Health Services reports emergency medical services responded to 140,000 falls last year, an increase of nearly 10,000 fall-related calls from 2023. Falls accounted for 21% of all 911-related ambulance runs in 2024. The Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging provides tools and information to understand fall risks. Check it out at fallsfreewi.org. Shel Maloney, Wisconsin Radio Network.
You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great-tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. More clouds than sun this afternoon, a comfortable early fall day with highs in the lower 70s. For tonight, some patchy fog developing, otherwise partly cloudy, a low of 53. Some areas of fog early, otherwise partly sunny on Wednesday with a high of 71. Looking for a great place to live, stay, shop, and play? It's easy to get to Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. Currently, it's 62.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovi at Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
Well, welcome to AgriTalk. As another government is shutdown is looming large, Congress and USDA continue talking assistance for farmers facing the worst 3 years of cash grain receipts in history. While many U.S. corn farmers think the farm economy is already in crisis or close to one. Plus, new world screwworm inches closer to the U.S. border. All that today on AgriTalk.
Live, ripping open a whole bag of pecan sandies via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll begin with a conversation with Jay Truitt from Policy Solutions. Then it's Krista Swanson of the National Corn Growers Association. And later, Wayne Cockrell from the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. Directly following the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip Flory, please welcome Michelle Rook. Good morning,
there
Michelle.
You go. Good morning, Davis. How are you doing?
Super good. Super good. The coffee's hitting. The coffee's hitting, like, just right now. You can tell
You're
by the size of my
eyes. You're
number
three, right?
Actually, cup number two and a half.
Oh, cup
right
number
here.
Two and a half. I don't know, as much energy as you have, I've told you this before, you are over-caffeinated, so...
I don't think it's the caffeine. I don't think, I mean, it helps a little, but this is just how I am.
It's just your genetics and personality.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. I put on a shirt and off I go. That's my secret. Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, grain seeing just a little bump today. Boy, yesterday was pretty ugly. So we had the export news out of Argentina that they were dropping their export tax on all their grains to zero until October 31st, and that sent the spiral, but at least we're trying to stabilize here today. So hopefully we have a better day in the markets.
I think we will. You know, I like our chances, and I'm just basing that on just strict raw optimism, Michelle. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. combines kind of out of the field around here. We've had some rains. How about down by you, Davis?
Yeah.
The combine's rolling pretty hard.
You know what? We're getting rain today. Supposed to rain all day long today. Currently 66 degrees, which I like. It gets awful hot down here in KC, and it just seems like sometimes it doesn't want to give, especially this summer. But we're a little cooler today. I'm feeling good. Cloudy, you know, this is not exactly combine in weather, but, you know, maybe we need a little rain.
Yeah, there's some areas, obviously, that could use some rain. I will say up here in the northwestern Corn Belt, we'd like to dry out just a little bit so we can get into the fields. We've had enough rain, so. Yeah,
for sure.
Can't seem to spread it out. But, yeah, hearing some harvest reports, a lot of the early ones on corn have been a little bit disappointing. As you move kind of, I guess, north of I-90, it sounds like any of the early corn that's coming out there is a little bit better. And yep. We kind of expect the northwestern Corn Belt's going to probably have better yields than some areas of the Corn Belt here this year. So it'll be interesting as the combines continue to get past this early disease-ridden crop that we've been talking so much about.
You bet.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the weather, kick us off in the news here this morning.
Sure thing. I'll start with the National Weather Service, who says an active and unsettled pattern over the central U.S. will not only continue, but become more organized over the next few days, leading to additional risks of both flash flooding and severe weather. Upper-level energy and surface low-pressure frontal systems will consolidate in the plains and move slowly eastward, drawing in ample Gulf moisture to fuel widespread heavy rain-producing thunderstorms. Now over to the markets, Michelle. Corn and soybeans and wheat futures were all lower overnight, with soybeans tapping another six-week low and SRW wheat at a new contract low. The U.S. dollar was generally steady, with crude oil futures finding light support ahead of the open. Here at 10:10 Central Time, we've got some strength. I figured that the soybeans would just head for the basement. We're up about 3 or 4 cents in the soybeans. Even the wheat's higher, corn up a few cents.
Yeah, a little turnaround Tuesday action. We got beat up pretty bad here the last couple of days. Soybeans have lost like 27 cents, so probably due for a little bit of a short covering correction here. And we just hit contract lows in wheat yesterday, so pretty oversold.
Yeah. Well, October live cattle and November feeder futures on Monday rose to a three-week high. November feeders traded limit up for a little while on Monday. Live and cattle futures trading limits will be expanded today due to the limit up close in Jan feeders on Monday. Now we've got the Fed cattle. The front three contracts are under some pressure here, but looking out further, there's a strength in the back months. Meanwhile, the feeder cattle, higher across the board on my screen here, and the hogs higher across the board as well.
Yeah, scoring a few contract highs there again today.
Yeah. Well, private exporters reported sales of nearly 123,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to Mexico. Of the total, 100,593 metric tons is for delivery for 25-26, and 22,354 metric tons is for delivery during the 26-27 marketing year. And here, this is why I thought maybe soybeans might head for the basement. Chinese buyers.
Yeah.
Reportedly booked at least 10 cargoes of Argentine soybeans after Buenos Aires on Monday scrapped grain export taxes. This, as you have mentioned earlier, that dealt another setback to U.S. farmers already shut out of their top market and hit by low prices. Argentina's temporary tax move boosts the competitiveness of its soybeans, prompting traders to secure cargoes for fourth quarter inventory. Inventories in China, and Michelle, that's a period usually dominated by U.S. shipments, now clouded by D.C.'s trade war with Beijing. And with that, looks like we've got Karen Bonert.
Yeah, Karen joining us here this morning. Karen Bonert is editorial lead for Dairy for Farm Journal. How you doing this morning?
Good, Michelle. We're great. We're gearing up for World Dairy Expo, but this milk production report was kind of a big news.
Yeah, talk about that. September milk production showing this continuing trend of more cows, more milk production, right?
Yeah, I think, it's kind of a broken cycle in the dairy industry. It's not new this year or last year. There were signals from the market of $8 billion in processing coming in through the pipeline. So there was growth wanted and needed. I think it was surprising how quickly it came, Michelle. And so 3% growth in 1 month is not a lot, but month after month, it adds up. And so the top 24 states is up 3%. And that's a lot of milk and a lot more cows. And I think we pause and think about what that's doing to the markets. Yeah. And class three has dropped $2.30 in the last month. And so that has not shown up in the producer's pocketbook and in the milk check yet. And when that does, it'll be interesting if this slows down a little bit. But, you know, when you're in expansion growth, you can't just start and stop because of milk price.
Yeah. You know, what do you think is triggering this growth? Is it just that, you know, we are not seeing any liquidation of any of these herds at all, or the culling isn't as hard, or what?
I don't think the culling is as hard, even though the beef price is there. You know, producers for a while were at a standstill where they couldn't grow. And so when the market said, hey, let's turn it on, they turned it on. There's the next generation coming back. When there's an opportunity to grow, you do. Obviously, interest rates are coming down a little bit. The cost to build is never going to get cheaper. But when we talk about $2.30 on milk price, those beef on dairy calves are helping offset that.
Yeah, well, that's the good news. And hopefully that can continue to make up for where that milk check is deficient. All right, thanks so much, Karen Bonert, Farm Journal Dairy Editorial Director. And you can see more of her stuff on agweb.com. Up next, Jay Truitt, Principal with Policy Solutions, joins us, AgriTalk, when we come back.
Always up early. Always getting the job done. Always working as hard as you can. Always pushing for more. Because you never settle. For farmers who seek outstanding performance they can count on, the only brand is DeKalb Corn. Featuring a broad portfolio of products precision bred to maximize profit potential on every field. DeKalb brand. Never settle. See us at DeKalb.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices. You'd never settle for underperformance. You'd never settle for less than maximum yield. You'd never settle for gaps in the stand. So why settle for anything less than DeKalb corn? DeKalb seed is for those who make outstanding performance a priority. With a broad portfolio of products bred to maximize profit potential on every field. DeKalb brand corn. Never settle. Visit DeKalb.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Running a trucking business is hard enough. Don't let compliance paperwork slow you down. At Dakota Group, we make DOT compliance simple and easy. From MCS 150 and UCR filings to strategic advisory services and more, Dakota Group is your trusted partner for comprehensive trucking compliance solutions. Don't wait. Get your trucking business DOT compliant today. Call 844-426-2400 today. Don't wait. Get your trucking business DOT compliant today.
Whatever crop you grow, we can help you protect it. Bootstrapped and ready to serve, Atticus delivers battle-tested chemistries, AIs that you've come to trust and rely on from a manufacturer that strives to operate in a way that makes us accessible, responsive, and reliable. Our relevant portfolio is ready to protect your battlefields and livelihood. No matter the pest, weather, or politics, Atticus and your American farmer tenacity is battle-ready. Meet your ally, AtticusLLC.com.
As veteran,
Compere Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compere Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compere.com. Compere Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. And MLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
The Wisconsin Corn Growers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit WICorn.org and become a member today.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Atticus, providing battle-tested chemistries you know and trust.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Flory today. And joining us this time around Jay Truitt, principal with Policy Solutions. Jay, you've got offices in D.C. and then what, Dallas or where?
Yeah, Dallas, Texas is the other operation. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the government shutdown looming once again here at the end of the month. House passed a stopgap bill to extend funding through November 21st, but to pass in the Senate, they got to get some more Democrats. Is that going to happen?
Well, and, you know, I mean, they've already. So the good thing is that we've progressed past the initial objections already, and we're into the hardcore stuff now. And I think by this point, everybody understands the, you know, kind of the give and play between Schumer and President Trump. It's real, right? Mr. Schumer's got himself in a really interesting position. The leader on the Republican side probably really maybe is having a better time of this than what the minority leader is, honestly, because the pressure's on him. And the end of the month is the end of the month. And I mean, there's very few things government does well, but stopping things at the end of the month is one of those things that they actually do really abide by. And so it's, I mean, we're going to stare it in the face. 2 days, I would say on Friday, I would have told you, I would almost guarantee that we were going to have a shutdown for a day or two. I don't really see that right now. I think somebody's going to cave here. And it'll probably cost somebody a lot of political clout, but I think we'll see people. I actually think they're going to pull it out. If nothing else, from an ag perspective for farmers and ranchers, right, they have to at least pass some sort of an extension to get them into a stopgap measure that kicks this can a little further down the road. They could do that separately. It's possible, right? We've extended 18 of these at some point or another, over time. Yeah, over time. It's been 18 of them. I actually looked it up this morning just out of curiosity. But so it's not like it's a new process, but and they'll figure that out, right?
Yeah. Speaking of somebody who's gotten a few more gray hairs the last year, my senator from South Dakota, our majority leader, John Thune, he's got a tough job, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And it's almost, I mean, the Senate is one of those places that, we've all seen the change that's taken place in just tone and attitude. And the Senate ignored that and was kind of immune to it for a long, long time. There are outliers here and there that would be, you know, that would get really rough and tumble. But for the most part, it was always this calmer, I would say a more genteel. I don't really know what the best term is, but it felt like a more genteel environment for things to work through, and they liked working together. You saw a lot of people working across the aisles privately in the halls all the time. And so the problem is with that, with the change that's now affected everything else in Washington, D.C., it's now like invaded the Senate, and people start off screaming. And for John Thune, who is has like the narrowest possible margin that he could deal with, and he's got two or three on his side of the aisle that are going to give him trouble no matter what. It's a miracle he has any hair left, right? I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't, because we all know him. He's like an uber competitive, uber focused driver. You know, he has a list of things he wants to get done today, and he wakes up with the intention of completing that list, right? And everybody stands in his way. And so it's a couple people on his side of the aisle are going to cause problems over any spending increases, or if we try to do like an ag bailout or something like that in the middle of this process. I do think this is going to be a real short-term extension, but I do think they'll get a CR done. And like this, they'll set, if John Thune is smart, my advice to him is set Christmas Day as the date, if you're going to pick one, because then everybody wants to get that last week off. They count on it. The staff will drive them nuts if they don't come to an agreement. But
we have to do it with a sledgehammer, Jay.
Yeah. Well, again, we're going to do this two or three times, right?
Yeah, so I gotcha.
People ought to just take deep breaths here and understand what's going on there.
You mentioned farm aid. Do you think that we will get Farm Aid passed, and will it be part of a skinny farm bill or a farm bill 2.0? I know House Ag Chairman G.T. Thompson and Bozeman over on the Senate have talked about that.
Yeah, I know it's going to come up. I'm just not for sure that it can get the political, like the rollers on the ag side are there for sure, right? Everybody in ag would like to hurry up and get something done. But to do a farm bill and to do an aid package that deals with what how China has like disrupted trade all over the world, right? Especially in grains and oil seeds, right? That's like a bridge too far, I think. Just when you talk to people outside the ag sector, they're still asking why it costs so much. They don't understand that there's like a conservation cliff in 27, right? And not all the programs are permanent. And even the programs that are permanent are like way different than what permanent law reads. People don't really get that outside of ag, but they just see the big numbers. We're going to have a fight over SNAP versus program dollars for agriculture research and market development and all that kind of stuff. I hope the two chairmen are correct, but I actually have a problem seeing us passing it next year as well. And I think we end up like into a 2027 route somewhere here, which gets super bizarre.
Okay. So if Rollins is already talking about some sort of a bridge payment that USDA would come up with, where will that money come from? Directly from the CCC or tariff revenues or where?
Yeah, well, she has a lot more flexibility with what she can do with CCC than she does with just picking tariff revenues. What gets lost in the whole tariff discussion is that we've been collecting tariffs for a long time. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, we collected over $100 billion in tariffs then. So we're at 165 now. That money goes into general revenue. And so she can't just reach over into the general revenue pot and spend that money without Congress giving her some authority somehow. Now, you know, money is fungible. They can move it around and scoot it around inside of agencies. But, this gets tough. And if she gets over, like, you know, 20, like, let's just say $23 billion or so, then my friends that are all on the government accountability calls that I'm on every week, they all start really getting focused on this like a laser beam. And I don't think agriculture wants that kind of scrutiny during a point in the process where they already have their hands full with the with a bunch of other projects. So, I mean, this gets weird.
Yeah. $23 billion, that's what we had during the 2019 trade war. So obviously that's kind of a bullseye there.
I've heard numbers, though, that go up to as high as like 32 in common sense discussions, right? Not people that are being crazy or outrageous about it, but it depends on how you do the math. If you're the guy selling $4.24 corn and $10 beans right now, 32 doesn't seem like such a big number.
No, it doesn't. All right, I got to ask you as well, with your cattle background, President Trump says that he's going to try to lower beef prices for consumers like they did eggs. And on Sunday, they put out a big news release USDA did about incentivizing ranchers and driving a full-scale revitalization of the American beef industry. What can they do at USDA to, I guess, you know, help the beef industry right now besides what they're investing in, say, New World Screwworm?
So the better question is what, when you talk to producers in the beef industry, what are the number one things that come up in that conversation? And honestly, it ends up being the same things that we've always had. I would tell you, if you're like in the state of Nebraska or a bunch of other states that have really had crippling, like literally crippling property tax bills and increases over the last several years, they would tell you that the reason that they're selling heifers is to pay their property taxes.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and the pain that comes with selling cattle at high prices, especially coal cows at high prices, is now you're having to deal with depreciation schedules that don't match what you thought they were going to match. And so it still turns out to be just that basic elementary stuff, right? And we're not going to fix it overnight, right? It's going to be 18 months before, if you kept a heifer today, if you made the decision, it's still 18 months before any progeny from that is going to be in the marketplace. And this discussion about the government managing prices, we did that once. And it cost us about half the people in the industry over time. So ask President Nixon's advisors whether or not that's a good idea, right?
Yeah, the beef industry is not like the poultry industry.
No.
You can't turn this thing on a dime. So
no, no. Right. We'll have to count on dairy to help us out here maybe somewhere.
I gotcha. All right, Jay, always fun to talk with you. Jay Truitt with Policy Solutions out of Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us. When we come back, we are going to talk about the National Corn Growers Association's recent study showing, hey, if we're not in a farm crisis, we may be close to it. That's coming up.
You okay?
Better than okay. The cows are loving Pioneer brand tonnage corn silage. With local selection and agronomics, plus service and support, the tonnage we got was amazing. And that feed quality really has an edge over the competition. I tell you, planting Pioneer brand tonnage corn silage is the best choice I ever made.
You sure about that?
Well, next to choosing you, of course.
Nice save.
Learn more at pioneer.com/tonnage.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine, not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive. Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
Hey, how was your day?
Great. Don't forget, Sam's practice starts an hour early.
I'm going right now.
Sam, are you ready? Coming.
I have that meeting at school. I'll see you later.
Life is busy. Your healthcare should keep up. At Amplify Health in Mondovi, we get it. Our primary care is built around what you need when you need it, with same-day, in-person, or video appointments available. Because sometimes feeling seen and understood means actually being seen. A little empathy changes everything.
Milk markets are higher with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnikins at the Mercantile Exchange. October milk up 24 to 17.10. November up 23 to 16.58. December up 15 to 16.84. January up 9 at 16.86. Meanwhile, live cattle markets are mixed. Feeder cattle low are mostly higher. As in the live cattle complex, the market's hesitant to move much higher, at least in the nearby months, as the market questions whether or not it has enough support to surpass current resistance levels. But feeder cattle markets are moving mostly higher as the countryside demand continues to remain strong and prices in the countryside remain high. Hog markets, meanwhile, continue to move mostly higher. They're moving past their previous resistance levels. And it will be imperative, though, that demand holds strong. And that will lend traders some additional fundamental support. There's also the Thursday quarterly and hogs pigs report coming out. October live cattle down $1.52 to $235.62. September feeder cattle up $2.47 to $365.20. October hogs up $1.45 to $100.25. Chicago Board of Trade corn markets are mostly higher on some short covering. Soybeans are mixed, a combination of harvest pressure and also some short covering in the market. Wheat markets are higher on short covering. December corn up 2.75 to $4.24.5. November beans down a half.
Farmers, it's harvest time, and the last thing you need is downtime while waiting for parts for your equipment. Need custom hydraulic hoses and fittings? See Durand Napa. Need hard-to-find parts? See Durand Napa. Need bulk oil or hydraulic fluid? See Durand Napa. Durand Napa also has filters with low prices throughout the entire year and has specialty tools for your equipment. Keep your equipment working throughout the harvest with Napa know-how from Durand Napa, Madison Street, Durand.
BioVet combines the latest research and technology to develop high-quality microbial and nutritional solutions for your operation. BioVet's innovative product line supports the immune system, digestive function, reproduction, along with growth and development of your livestock. Learn more at bio-vet.com and visit us at World Dairy Expo booth number EH1503 and 1504. EH1503 and 1504.
Innovation.
necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Flory. Krista Swanson is Chief Economist with the National Corn Growers Association, joining us as one of our guests today on AgriTalk. Good morning, Krista.
Hey, good morning.
Well, Krista, I wanted to get you in here because I talked to Kenneth Hartman, your president, last week while you were straight off that economic roundtable in Washington, where you guys released kind of some survey work that you had been doing about corn growers' thoughts on if the nation's farm economy is in a crisis or on the brink of one. And tell me, first of all, what did you find?
Yeah, so, I mean, given the current farm economy and the challenging economic outlook that, you know, we're in year three of you know, negative returns and looking ahead to next year, it's not looking better. We wanted to get a pulse on, I guess I'll say one more thing on that note, too, is, you know, USDA earlier this month put out their farm income forecast, and that headliner number is higher net farm income. And you know, that we know that that's not reflective of what's happening in the crop sector. And so wanted to get a pulse of you know, how farmers are feeling about the economy and their financials. And I think these results are so important to get out there because they reflect that, you know, really what's happening at the farm gate. You know, one of the questions that we asked was, how concerned are you about the farm economy? And over, you know, half were very concerned, together with the moderately concerned. We had 76% either very or moderately concerned. The one that you were just talking about is, we asked if farmers felt like we are on the brink of a farm crisis, and almost 80% of respondents said that they think that we are or maybe on the brink of farm crisis. You know, another question we asked, how they're feeling about their farm financials compared to a year ago, and two-thirds are more concerned. So again, really reflecting how farmers are feeling right now.
Right, and we're coming off of the worst 3 years of cash grain receipts for farmers in history, down, what, $71 billion? That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, just looking at one of the things that I regularly calculate is USDA puts out these cost of production numbers by commodity per acre. I take that times the average. Those are, you know, averages, but take that times the average yield and average market, your average price expected. And when we do that, you know, we're looking at almost $170 losses on average for corn growers this year. And that's following, you know, that's the third year in a row below 100, and looking ahead to next year, even worse. And so cumulatively, these 3 years, 23, 24, 25, are the largest, you know, three-year deficit going back as far as the cost of production data set goes to 1975. So at least 50 years, largest three-year cumulative decline for this metric.
And input costs and the cost of production, I think, what does USDA have that at? $897 per acre?
Yes, yeah, right around $900 an acre. Wow. Looking ahead to next year, looking a little bit higher. This, it has been right around $900 since 2022. And the problem here is that, you know, we're talking about a cost of production that's been about the same since 2022. If we remember back in 2022, there was times where the nearby futures contract was above $8. In the past month, the nearby futures has been below $4. It's been some time below that $4 mark. So we're talking about, you know, a potential more than 50% decline in opportunity, pricing opportunity for farmers. At the same time, costs have stayed about the same.
Right. You have a task force that you've recently launched to kind of identify some of the solutions to bring these costs a little bit more in line with commodity prices, right?
Yes. So just launched a new task force. I think a few years ago, NCGA did a new strategic plan, and, you know, the two top priorities, one of them was demand. We talk about demand all the time. We're focused on demand, hoping that that can help on the price side. But the other, one of the other top priorities was protecting farmer profitability. And that's where this comes in is, you know, we also have the cost side of the equation to think about. And, you know, so put together this group, kind of starting, you know, that three-part series that I did on cost of production was sort of the informational stage, getting out there where we are. And then, yeah, thinking about, are there solutions, identifying solutions, and you know, what can we do? And we're still, you know, just launched, and so in the early stages of that.
Right. And until that happens, producers are already looking at or considering some changes for next year to try to weather the storm, aren't they, which are kind of concerning?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the, that was another question that we asked farmers is, you know, what changes might you make for next year? And, you know, not surprisingly, a large number, almost 60%, said postponing equipment purchases. You know, this isn't one of those must-have inputs like seed. You know, we can't grow a crop without seed, so we're not going to see farmers cutting that. But you know, a lot of times we can get an extra couple years out of that machinery, even if we had made previously planned on trading. A lot of farmers kind of follow a regular schedule, but the problem with that is that, you know, we've done other studies that show that agriculture, when it's doing well, there's this positive ripple effect throughout the economy. On the other hand, when farmers cut back on machinery purchases, we see a negative ripple effect throughout the economy, because that's impacting those local retailers. It's impacting the manufacturers. So that's concerning. You know, another top thing that farmers marked was reducing fertilizer application. And you can say kind of the same things about what I said about machinery. We see this ripple effect throughout the economy that, you know, is not something that we want to see. We want to be able to support those input and equipment manufacturers and suppliers.
Right. And of course, we have a 16.8 billion bushel crop coming at the market here at harvest. And so we got to have more demand to get through all of those bushels of corn. So talk about some of the things that you're appealing to Congress and whatnot on the demand side.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we are, you know, wanting to see more trade agreements. We know that's something that we're hearing a lot from the administration, but the big thing that we have been really pushing for, a bunch of us, including myself, were just out in DC last week, carrying the message of we need to get E15 passed, and we need to get it passed now. You know, this is a first step. It's something that is outdated and overdue, the prevention to nationwide year-round E15 access. And you know, it could be impactful to our corn growers over time, and it also, you know, opens the door for higher blends of ethanol going forward. This is something that's, you know, in our media panel last week, we talked about this is good for the environment, it's good for consumers, it's good for farmers, but it's also good for the economy. We recently partnered with Renewable Fuels Association to put out a study looking at what would be the impact of the full implementation of E15 on the economy. And, you know, we showed that that could add an additional $26 billion in economic activity. That's greater contribution to GDP, provide 128,000 additional jobs, and $10.3 billion in incomes for those workers. And so, you know, I think, like I said, we're talking about not only the typical triple benefit that we talk about, but here's another one that we can refer to, too.
Yeah. You know, as farmers are sitting in the combine already starting to plant for 2026, in your mind, are they thinking that they're going to plant less corn acres in 2026, especially when you have fertilizer prices so high?
Yeah, good question. I mean, looking at how much it costs to grow an acre of corn, you know, that could be a detriment, but I would have probably said the same thing at this time last year, and here we are. You know, I don't know. I think that a lot of that depends on we hear from administration, the potential for a trade deal with China, and would that include purchase commitments for soybeans? I think potentially what happens with that could impact how that acres, you know, because we know that there's a lot of, obviously there's other crops in the mix too, but a lot of the ups and downs in corn acres are offset with ups and downs in soybean acres. And so looking ahead to next year, you would think that we would see some pullback in corn acres just because of that natural up and down that we normally see every other year. But, you know, if we are sitting in January, February of next year and still have no purchases this marketing year from China, you know, that could influence farmers the other way. So think that it's going to be really important what's happening in the broader crop complex throughout the next few months.
Well, and I talked to your president, Kenny Hartman, last week, and obviously as a producer, he says, I do not want aid. It doesn't make me whole, and we would rather have income from the marketplace. But are we getting at a point where some of these guys are going to absolutely need some sort of a payment this fall, Krista, just to get through to this next year?
Yeah, so organizationally, we've definitely been very focused on market-driven demand and market-supported prices. But we also realize that a trade deal made today or E15 legislation passed today isn't going to create the full implementation demand levels that we talk about immediately. Like, there's going to take time to scale to that. And so, where are farmers going to be this fall? We saw from our survey that 2/3 are more concerned about their farm financials compared to a year ago. So I think that maybe is as one gauge of telling how farmers are feeling. And, you know, as we progress throughout the fall, I think another one of the factors that's going to play into this is, are yields really where they're projected to be? What I'm hearing from, you know, our family farms and what I'm hearing from neighbors, but also our growers from across the country, is that, you know, there's huge variability in corn yields, hearing some that aren't so great out there. And so what does that mean? Farmers are going to need every possible bushel at this price and cost levels. And so if that's not there, then I think that adds to the financial hardship.
Yeah, just quick, as an economist, do you think we're in a farm crisis?
Well, it's hard to say. I know typically from the economist perspective, we're looking at land values and things like that. And we haven't seen major softening in those. So, depends what metrics you want to look at.
Okay. Thanks so much, Krista Swanson, NCGA Chief Economist. When we come back, we're going to talk about New World Screwworm with Wayne Cockrell.
Want to get
Wisconsin soybean farmers are fueling Wisconsin. In 2021, the value of Wisconsin soybeans was $1.61 billion. That fuels our state's economy, communities, and Wisconsin's future. Wisconsin soybean farmers fuel our state, country, and the world while protecting the land and water. Learn how the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board and Wisconsin Soybean Association are working hard to fuel our farms and future. Visit WisconsinSoybean.org.
Just like you, Cenex Premium Diesel is no stranger to the field. In fact, Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. In simpler terms, you get restored power by up to 4.5% and restored fuel economy by up to 5%. Of course, there's always typical number 2 diesel. If you're not into the whole added power thing, Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Your Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster distributor is Elsevia Co-op.
Farmers, thinking about doing cover crops? Christina Olson is pleased to announce cover crop and forage planting services this fall. Adding a living root onto your valued land can improve soil health, build organic matter, residue management, control soil erosion, boost crop yields, as well as increase residue to help combat white mold in soybeans. Call Christina Olson at 715-495-6104 for your cover crop needs while improving your farm's bottom line. Find her on Facebook at Christina's Cover Crops, offering winter wheat, rye, and Cali.
Whether you have a large animal or a small one, the Animal Wellness Center of Buffalo Valley can keep them healthy. With top-notch veterinary care plus boarding and grooming services, the Animal Wellness Center keeps your pet happy. And they specialize in chiropractic care to keep your large animals moving. Make an appointment by calling 715-926-3836. The patients come first at the Animal Wellness Center of Buffalo Valley, located in the Mondovi Industrial Park, your complete traditional and holistic veterinary care clinic.
Ahead, their businesses thrive. Will Mangan is a services adoption manager at Winfield United. Will, what is the best advice you can offer to growers to sharpen their pencils as this year plays out and to plan for next year?
Yeah, I would say don't make any decisions in a vacuum. Consider all of your inputs, but it's also critical for growers to have access to capital to make timely agronomic decisions for their operations. So work with your local agronomists to help with the agronomics, but then also use Secure to help with the operations profitability.
Yeah, you're making a great point here, because getting the agronomic decisions to work together is one thing, but financing them is completely different. How can growers put those two things together to work to their advantage.
Secure financing by Winfield United is a program that provides growers with access to attractive fixed-rate lines of credit for input purchases. Secure financing also offers unmatched flexibility that was made around a grower's unique business cycle to provide cash when they most need it. The maturity date for Secure is not until February of after the crop season is over, which is also a huge benefit to growers.
Okay, Will, so help us out here. How can growers put themselves in the best position possible for next year?
Yeah, secure financing offers flexibility that can put growers in a better position for next year by allowing them to prepay on either side of that calendar year. So it helps you make better management of your financing, and it puts you in a better position when it comes to tax opportunities.
Excellent. Hey, where can we learn more about this?
Yeah, you can go to your local ag retailer, or you can visit winfieldunited.com.
Thank you, Will. That is Will Mangan. He is the Services Adoption Manager at Winfield United.
Hi, I'm Paul Niefer, a CPA and author of the Farm CPA blog and column for Top Producer. Join me every week on the Top Producer podcast for conversations about the top trends in farm management, tax issues, succession planning, policy implications, and more. Each week, I visit with business-minded farmers and ag experts for lively and in-depth conversations. Subscribe to the Top Producer podcast, available on your preferred podcast platform, and listen to a new episode every Tuesday.
With corn rootworm costing farmers up to $1 billion a year, you need the right strategy. Introducing Durastack Trait Technology, featuring three powerful modes of action to strike corn rootworm at full force, outsmart, outmaneuver, and outmatch their every move with the industry's first triple BT protein stack built for corn rootworm control. Take back your yield potential. Make your move at Durastack.com. Available for the 2027 season.
AgriTalk is brought to you by FBN Finance, helping family farms through tough times with land loan rates as low as 5.19% for well-qualified borrowers. Rates subject to credit approval and may vary. Visit FBN.com/AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook. Joining us right now, Wayne Cockrell is a director with the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. He's chair of the Cattle Health and Well-Being Policy Committee and also a rancher from College Station, Texas. Well, good to have you along. Wanted to talk to you about New World Screwworm. Obviously, we've been watching this for the last few months here. It's now been detected 70 miles from the U.S.-Mexican border. Is it, Wayne, a matter of not when, but if this parasite gets into the U.S., do you think?
Unfortunately, yes. And it would be the answer. You know, the only thing that may help us this year, this fall, would be winter, colder weather coming. And, you know, so that could help us delay this until, you know, next April or May or so. But it's inevitable, you know, just given the way this thing's moved and how quickly it's moved. And, you know, and I guess you would say the lack of border security and protocols on Mexico's southern border. And just kind of, we kind of have an open border down there, and the, you know, the controls and inspection process and those are something that we've certainly been concerned about for a while now, getting that under control so that we can stop this. We would much rather stop this on Mexico's southern border than our southern border.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like the USDA's 5-point eradication plan, is it on point?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you know, that the thing about it is, it's obviously, I mean, feral flies are the answer to this. You know,
okay.
There are a lot of band-aids that we can put on this, and, you know, surveillance is critical, and the you know, the products that we can use for treatment and using our part of our vaccination protocols to you know, make sure that we get, you know, whether it be a adormectin or ivermectin, something in the blood. In the bloodstream to help protect those, but feral flies, and you know, it's been proven back in the 50s and 60s, and that is really the best eradication program, and that needs to be built sooner rather than later. And so that's certainly our concern, is that this is a 4 or 5 year process. That's the trouble.
Yeah, I know that was one of the things that was talked about yesterday when we heard about this detection moving farther north, that we need more sterile fly dispersal, but you can only push that really so fast here. EPA, as you mentioned, though, has authorized some, or FDA has worked on some emergency treatments for the parasite. EPA's really got to authorize some more new pesticide products, though, to combat screwworm, don't they?
That's correct. Well, there are some products that are currently being used in Central and South America that would certainly help that process. And we understand in all likelihood, once it gets here, it's no longer a foreign animal disease. And so from an emergency use standpoint, there are some things that they're allowed to do. It would probably be quicker than asking these pharmaceutical companies to go through and try to do their research and
for sure.
I'm just saying, this wouldn't matter.
So Wayne, talk about economically, what has the impact been of having the border closed to Mexican feeder cattle meant for feedlots down in Texas and the South?
Well, it certainly has impacted these Texas feed yards. I mean, I've seen figures that, 30% of their inventory would those Mexican cattle. And in the past, I've fed some of those cattle and turned some of those to graze over the years. It's just kind of a part of our way of doing business and our quote unquote domestic cattle supply down here. But we also, especially we cattle raisers, we understood that. Do we feel like that we would get a case coming in under the treatment inspection protocols that are in place? No, we don't. Those are good, valid scientific methods, and their inspection process is being inspected by USDA. The problem is how do you use that leverage to close Mexico's southern border, or at least to get it to where those same protocols are being followed down there that we are implementing on our border? And so, it's a little bit, Secretary Rollins has used that as leverage, and also as a way not to pull those cattle north. This latest case was an 8-month-old heifer that was sent to a feed yard 70 miles from our border, from southern Mexico, from infested zones. And so if that border were wide open, I think you would be seeing even more cattle.
Now, Cattle Facts says that feeder cattle supplies from Mexico are going to be down like 1.2 million head this year. How much has that hurt Texas feedlots from, that's a main source of your supplies that you have to put into your feedlot. So where are you getting them from, or what's going on?
I think a lot of those feed yards have moved to the Dairy Cross side of the deal. They just had to change the way that they do business. It certainly put pressure on anyone that's in the stocker business or the feeder calf business on purchasing inventory. These calf prices are high. We're all fighting over the same smaller pool of cattle, and so that has certainly been a boom for cow calf producers.
Right.
But we also understand on the other side of that is we don't want to price ourselves out of our American consumer buying habits. And that's a deep concern as well. And so when you throw all that together, would that inventory would certainly have helped somewhat,
Sure.
I think it's also too important to remember is, 1.2 million is a lot. It impacts Texas a lot throughout our country's domestic supplies about 2 weeks.
Well, we appreciate you being with us and give us an update on that this morning. Thank you.
Absolutely. Winter and sterile flies are what we need now.
You bet. Thanks. Wayne Cockrell, a rancher from College Station, Texas. And Davis, give us a little bit of an update on the weather, and we'll talk a little bit about our afternoon guest as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the current radar right now from about Casper, Wyoming, down through the Tennessee area, through western Tennessee. It looks like we've got just a solid bank of showers there. We've got some showers up into southern central Michigan, and they're going to be slow moving. They'll move southward out of Wyoming into the mountains around the Denver area, and off we go. Rainy day. Michelle?
All right, thanks so much. Yeah, come back with us at 2:06, Sean.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Want to get smarter and have some fun while you're at it? Introducing Unscripted and Grow Getters, two of agriculture's most entertaining and engaging podcasts. Hosted by U.S. Farm Report's Tyne Morgan and Ag Day's Clinton Griffiths, Unscripted is your chance to meet the personalities behind the personalities. And with heart and humor, Grow Getters with host Davis Michelson explores ag's most innovative side hustles. You can find Unscripted and Grow Getters on the Farm Journal YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Zoe. Got donuts.
Jeff Bridges, why are you still living above our garage?
Well, I dig the mattress, and I want to be in a T-Mobile commercial like you. Teach me, Sildana.
Oh, no, I'm not really prepared. I couldn't possibly.
At T-Mobile, get the new iPhone 17 Pro on them. It's designed to be the most powerful iPhone yet and has the ultimate pro camera system.
Wow, impressive. Let me try. T-Mobile is the best place to get iPhone 17 Pro because they've got the best network.
Nice, Jeffrey.
You heard them. T-Mobile is the best place to get the new iPhone 17 Pro on us with eligible trade-in in any condition.
So, what are we having for lunch?
Dude, my work here is done.
The 24-monthly bill credits on Experience Beyond for well-qualified customers plus tax and $35 device connection charge. Credits ended. Balance due if you pay off earlier. Cancel. Finance agreement. iPhone 17 Pro, 256 gigs, $1,099.99, and new line minimum $100 plus a month plan with auto pay plus taxes and fees required. Best mobile network in the U.S. based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data 1H 2025. Visit T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to WRGN 1430 AM Durand Mondovi Wabasha and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH Durand.
News. I'm Michelle Franzen. During his address at the UN General Assembly, President Trump questioning the role of the United Nations.